week, we study Galilee, pretty much. That's what we study. And this week, we're going to go from Galilee to Jerusalem. So from Galilee to Jerusalem, in the next week, we're going to see again Jerusalem, other sites that we didn't see in Jerusalem. And at this point, there's not much archaeological finds that we will find. But we're going to talk about archaeological sites and some of the traditions that the Christian church has about some of these sites. So it's important to remember that during the first century, the Holy Land was divided in four territories, right? It was a tetrarchy. So the territory was divided when Herod the Great died. Three of his sons each got a territory, and a fourth territory was under a Roman official. Then one of his sons that was very evil, Archelaus, was taken from power, from his kingdom, and it was given to a Roman official called Pontius Pilate, who became the Roman official running the kingdom of Judea. But pretty much those were the four territories. So you have, this is one, this is another, this is another, and we have the Decapolis here. So what is important for us is this territory here and this one here for now, which are under the control of Herod the son, Herod Jr., as they called, with this Herod Antipas. And this is where Jesus does most of his ministry. In the Gospels, we have the record of Jesus coming to Jerusalem three times. Three times. And that's actually what leads us to think that his ministry was done through 3 years. We really don't know how long his ministry was. We don't have a chronological description in the Gospels. In the Gospels of Mark, Matthew, and Luke, we have one visit to Jerusalem only. In the Gospel of John, we have three visits to Jerusalem. So it makes us then believe in 3 years of ministry, although two visits were done in the same year. But generally, believe that it was through 3 years. So we talked about the ministry in Galilee that was under the power of Herod's, and it was the west part of it was the more populated, was the part where the roads, the main roads for the Roman Empire were. And this west part was the more desolate. So you see that there are not many cities on the east part, I mean. The east part has not, there are not many cities. There are some very steep mountains and desert. It's all a desert, so there's not really much into it. And here are the main cities. So last week we talked about a house that was found in Nazareth. So until the year 2015, 2009, some digs started, but until 2015, some were saying that Nazareth was not even a city when Jesus existed. And then a dig was found under the cathedral, the Basilica of Annunciation, and a house was found, and this has been called Jesus' House. So it was dug under the basilica, on the side and under the basilica. And a first century house was found. And again, this house, the intention of saying it was the house of Jesus, not to say this was literally where Joseph and Mary and little Jesus and his brothers and sisters lived. But it's just to say that it was in a house like this that Jesus lived. And we have some artistic description of this house. So it was a two stores house. Some will say it was a third. There was access to the third as well. And there were cisterns. There was a little patio. So it was a common middle-class people house in Nazareth in the first century. So there's no more debate much about if Nazareth was existed, really, if it was a city in the first century. It has been proven. But we know that when Jesus started his ministry, he went to Capernaum, right? And that's what Scripture tells us. In Mark chapter 1, 21 says, "And they went into Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath he entered the synagogue and was teaching." And says, "And immediately he left the synagogue and entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John." So Jesus starts his ministry in Capernaum. And is the place where he always comes to because he lived in Capernaum. So the Bible text says, "And he returned home," or "he returned to the house." And the site of Capernaum is also a known site for many, many years. And there's a little settlement, first century there, is Nazareth, says. And living Nazareth, he went and lived, meaning he really lived. He had a house there in Capernaum by the sea in the territory of Zebulun and Naphtali, fulfilling the prophecy of Isaiah 9. So this is the settlement of Capernaum. This is Capernaum. And here we have a synagogue, and here we have Peter's house, and a church on top of what it was Peter's house. It's a relatively small settlement, probably a few hundred people, between 500 and 800 people live there. And we talked about this last week, so I'm just, it's kind of a review. And we have, like, this is a graphic representation of what it was looking at Peter's house. So this is Peter's house here. This compound here, this whole compound is Peter's house. So the main house, and there were, like, three buildings in it. There was a little patio, and Peter was drying fish here on top of the roof, as you say, as you can see. So this is what it was looking at the ruins of the city. There's also a synagogue there. That's the synagogue that Jesus preached in, although the building of the synagogue that is there is from the 4th century. Can you just go back one? See? So this is the synagogue, but the foundation of the synagogue is 1st century. So this is Capernaum. The other city that we talked about last week was the city of Bethsaida, or Bethsaida. And there has been a debate about where this city was. But just recently, in 2019-2020, conservative archaeologists, Christian archaeologists that take the Bible to be historically accurate, believe that this site here is the site of Bethsaida. So previously, we had this site, Etel, that was from over 100 years has been considered the site of Bethsaida. Or so it's believed. But the new digs and new exploration have found this site here, El Arash. And what they're digging and what they're finding, and again, they're still digging there today. They're still finding. They're still uncovering. They believe that they didn't dig a third of the whole site yet. It's not a third of the whole site. So they found a Byzantine church here, and as you know, when the Roman Empire turns to Christianity, became a Christian empire, churches were built on holy sites, and this is a confirmation. So most likely Bethsaida was this and was here, and makes a lot more sense because you have this inlet, and Bethsaida, as I told you, is the house of fish, the house of fishermen. So it makes a lot more sense than having to carry your boat or something. So this is how it was. This is the Sea of Galilee. This is the inlet that we talked about. But last week, we forgot one city. We didn't forget, actually. There was no time for it. But there's another city, which is the city of Chorazin. So this is the third city here. It's called the third unrepent cities, actually. Theologians and in books will refer to them, the three unrepent cities. And this is the third unrepent city. And this is a little bit far off from the shore. It was up on the mountains. And this is a settlement of the first century as well. And it has a synagogue right here in the middle. And you can see that it's, you know, a complex that was very significant for the first century. Archaeologists found out that it was a center for olive oil production. How do they know? Because they found the tools of the trade there, literally. So they found a lot of olive mills. So this is an olive mill. Here's the synagogue that was that is in the middle of the whole complex. And the synagogue itself brings details that are olive leaves and olive themes in it. So the next one, which are like these and these. So Chorazin, we learn, was from the olive industry. So they had a lot of olive trees there around, and they did olive oil, and they found pools of it. One very interesting item that they found in Chorazin was a mikvah. Oh, this one, actually. It was a very interesting one. It's called the Seat of Moses. And it's called by the archaeologist the Seat of Moses, which is actually a seat that was found in digging in the synagogue. And this was probably the seat that was up front. And you remember the reference that when Jesus reads the scroll of Isaiah and he sits down to teach. You remember that expression? He read and he sat down to teach. And this is where the rabbi would seat here to teach. And here there's a very nice inscription which says something like this. In the memory of such and such who built this thing, may God give him a reward for that. So the guy who built the seat made a little dedication to himself, or perhaps the rabbi of the synagogue did there in his memory, and God should reward him for building the seat and stuff. But it's interesting that, again, the olive leaves kind of theme that it has there, and it's called the Seat of Moses. And it's called the Seat of Moses because they read the Law of Moses and sat like Moses to teach the people. So archaeologists call it the Seat of Moses. Another very interesting find there was a mikvah here. Do you know what this is? It is a little pool for ritual bath. So the Jews would go in it and get purified, and they would come out. So that is the ritual of purification and of the many laws of Moses. So you remember when the Law of Moses says that if you touch any kind of fluid from the body, or you touch a dead person, or, you know, several laws or blood, you are unclean until the end of the day. Then you should wash your body and do that. Well, the Jews established that, you know, for the sake of just a common practice to have those mikvahs for a normal ritual. And the Pharisees established like a regular daily washing. Regular daily washing. So, and the mikvahs were for the whole purification of the spiritual purification. So those mikvahs are very, very interesting. And I know what you're thinking here. What are you thinking? Baptism. You think baptism. And see, it's baptism by immersion. They do immersion. Well, first of all, there's a debate if they emerged completely or they just got to here. But they also practice the purification through sprinkling. which is very common in the first century. So both ways were done, B through immersion and B through, and most likely the practice of the washing ritual is what is the shadow of baptism, what was the meaning, but the symbol that is in the background of baptism, the baptism of John. It's a very interesting site, Chorazin. It has what they call Chorazin windows, which is a kind of architecture that they found only there, and it's architecture from the Galilee, and it showed that there was some very nice houses and very nice buildings there, showing that it was probably a important center there. And that's very interesting to us, because then gives us this real live scene of Capernaum as a center for fishing trade, as Bethsaida as a center for catching fish, as Chorazin as a center for production of oil and sale of oil. So it was the main centers and the main busy places. Another thing that you find these sites is that they are, with the exception of Bethsaida, but they are the majority, they are Jewish. Bethsaida is a mixed site. Bethsaida is a mixed site. There is a lot of Roman in there, and as I told you last week, one of the things that the archaeologists found in Bethsaida was catfish, the bones of catfish. And that led them to conclude that the people were there was not the best quality of Jews, because catfish is an impure fish. But they were eating catfish nonetheless. So they were not that thorough in keeping of the law. And probably because of the miscegenation, because of the mixture with other peoples there, with the Romans and Jews, that's what I meant. So, very interesting sites. And when we look at these sites today, what is their situation? What is the situation of Capernaum, Bethsaida, and Chorazin? How are they? Thriving, vibrant cities, great centers. How are they? And they didn't until they were found more recently. I told you, 2009-15, Capernaum has known for a little bit. Chorazin has been dug in the past 20 years. No, they are only an archaeological site. So that brings us really into light and the fulfillment of the woe of Jesus. Woe, Capernaum. Woe, Bethsaida. Woe, Chorazin. They don't exist anymore. At one point, these cities were depopulated. They were destroyed by wars. They were destroyed by famine. And they disappeared. The unrepent cities. And it's interesting because here in Matthew 11, it says, he began to denounce the cities where most of his mighty works were done, which is that northern part of Galilee. So both cities were in a radius of 6 miles. 6 miles. It's very kind of close. We're going to go to that in a minute. Can you just going back to that first map of the northern part there. A little bit more. Yeah, here. I don't have, for some reason, I forgot to put Chorazin in this map, but Chorazin would be around here in this region, in these mountains here. So it would be around here. From here to here, there's around 4 miles. So from Capernaum to Bethsaida, there's 4 miles. And here is Chorazin. So it is a radius of around like 6 miles. And those cities were in constant communication. And also, when it says, and Jesus went through the synagogues in Galilee preaching. So you can imagine that he was in that synagogue in Chorazin. And then he would go to Bethsaida. Then he would go back to Capernaum. And then he would go to these other cities as well. The text of this Sunday, for instance, said that he came to this place here, Gennesaret. So, and then he performed a lot of miracles, which is the same site of the Beatitudes, which are believed to be having been done on this hill over here. So this is the hill of the Beatitudes, which is on the side of Gennesaret. So Jesus was all over here, but mostly here. So Scripture tells us that he was concentrated in that region where he did most of his. And as you know, and we're looking into as we go through Mark, he didn't need to go many. He didn't need to go far. Why? Because people were flocking to see him from Jerusalem, from Tyre, from Sidon. Romans, people were coming to see him, so there was not really a need to move much, all right? But now, let's go to Jerusalem. Let's get on the road and let's go to Jerusalem. So if you're in Galilee and you want to go to Jerusalem, which road would you take? Which road will you take? There are 3 roads. So they are in the white, in red, and in green here. And there are, you know, possible different ways, but it's considered kind of one main road. So the most straightforward route, road to Jerusalem, coming north, going south, is the white route that would go through Samaria. And for Jews, that would be the most dangerous road. Why? Because Samaritan thieves would assault, would rob, assault, beat some Jews that were going to Jerusalem in their pilgrimage to worship in the temple, to the Passover at the beginning of the year, and then later to the day of purification. So there were like 2 times of the year that you would go to Jerusalem. There were actually 3, but they were concentrated in like 2 big trips. One at the beginning, like in the spring, and the other one in the fall. So, the end of the fall. The very beginning of the spring and the end of the fall. And the other road that would be the most used one, this first road would take 3 days. 3 days. And I'll tell you a little bit why it would take 3 days. You say, how long, Pastor? How long that is? That is around 60 miles, 70 miles. So that's what it would take them 3 days to travel. The most used one would be the red one, though. So this is probably the one that Jesus used most times. But also the road through the west was used. But as it was the longer road, it was not always used, and it would take around a week or over a week through that part over there. But this road here was the most used road. The Romans, when Caesar Augustus was raised to power, he started a new reform of the state of Rome. And one of the things that he promoted is the building of roads. He soon figured out that for growth of his empire, he needed to build better roads. Make Rome great again. That was his program. I'm joking. So he built a lot of roads And this is the road system in Rome, so you have an idea. Here, I have just a map for you too. So this is Rome, okay? This is Spain. Here, there is a connection to the British Islands through a boat kind of thing. So pretty much you could, and here another connection through boat. So pretty much you could come through Spain and get all the way to Jerusalem. Some historians have said that a letter that was sent in urgency could get from one end to the empire to the other in 8 days. In 8 days, it would be carried. And they would do like a rotation of horsemen. So they would have a horseman that would ride the most that he could until a certain point, and he would get a letter to the other guy, and the other guy would do as much. It was not one guy that would go all the way. They had a real logistics for that. Also, the roads helped them with the produce and food and commerce and helped their army. Their roads were very elaborate, which is a very interesting archaeological element here. The roads had, you know, they were made of cobblestones, but if you look at the cobblestones, you say, oh, very simple. No, not at all. It had like deep layers of gravel. So they do a foundation, a very strong foundation at the bottom. Then they do start with big stones to smaller one to gravel, and that's where they settle the cobblestones. And they had like an engineer corps of Romans that were specialists in doing that. And they did that. And they were soldiers, Roman soldiers, that were specialized in doing that. And in some campaigns and battles, it's interesting. It was almost like laying track, train track, you know, where they were laying train track and the train was moving, and they were laying track and the train was moving. It was, in some campaigns, almost like that. They were making the road and the army coming and making more road and the army and the whole structure coming. It was impressive. And they were, in many ways, very smart people, and they didn't get to be the Romans if they were not. But it's because of these roads that you could do in 3 days. It was not paved all the way, but great part of it, good sections of it, were paved. And there was a mountainous path that was not paved, but it was quite good, quite good. Romans, as I said, they were very careful with this thing of roads and having good roads for all communication and purpose. So that's what it was. So looking here at this road, we have some interesting sites that we can look. You remember these two mounds here, Ebal and Gerizim? We started with this. Is the mountain of Joshua, the mount of blessing, the mount of curse. That is an important place. Also, more on top of it, around here, Mount Tabor is where the early fathers believed that the transfiguration happened. So Mount Tabor is the mount of transfiguration, which is here. And on top of Mount Tabor, there is a church. Do you know the name of this church? Church of the Transfiguration. Good, good job. Yeah. This is, I think, 18th century building, but it has very early foundations, Byzantine foundations. However, again, this is one of those sites that there's not much archaeological proof of anything here, but it's just so you know that it was in the road. So back to the road there. We come to Shechem. Is it where we are? Yes. Mount Tabor. Let's go forward. Let me see. Yep. Yes. So there in Sichem we have Mount Gerizim. And in Mount Gerizim we have a Samaritan temple. This Samaritan temple was built in 450 before Christ. It was destroyed in 110 before Christ. So when Jesus was alive, the temple was destroyed. It was in ruins, pretty much similar perhaps to what it is today. But you remember that in the conversation with the Samaritan woman, and let me ask you, if Jews usually avoid that road, why was Jesus in that road? You remember that early in that passage, he says to his disciples, let's go through Samaria. And they said, Samaria? He says, I must go through Samaria. I have to go through Samaria. And they are contesting him. Are you really going to go through this road? And that he goes through Samaria. And then he talks to the woman by the well. You remember the question that she asks? Our fathers say that it's this mountain. And they are on a well, probably on the foot of the mountain. And some think that it's the well of Isaac. I think it's the well of Isaac that is at the bottom of that hill. There is this so-called well of Isaac. And some think it's there. And Jesus is there by this well. And there's these two mountains, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. And she says, look, some say, and you can picture the woman pointing to the mountain. Because she says, in this mountain. But you say that the right place is Jerusalem. Where is the right place? And most likely, she is referring to this site here, which is a Samaritan temple, which was used by Samaritan worship and is still used today. The Samaritans are a small group in Palestine there. They still exist. The real Samaritans, they call. And they have a festival once a year that they come up this mountain and they worship here. Samaritans. They consider themselves also descendants of the Jews. Coming along, when we look at this road and think now on this side, there is a site that is very interesting for us, which is right here, which is the site of Jesus' baptism. Where was Jesus baptized? You remember? No? John 1, 28, 29 says, these things took place in Bethany across the Jordan where John was baptizing. The next day he saw Jesus coming towards him and said, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. So where was Jesus baptized? In Bethany. And this is called Bethany across the Jordan, meaning on the other side of the Jordan, which is this site over here, which has been excavated, and it's a site where there were ruins of an early temple, and it's today a site for baptism. So if you go visit Jerusalem, or if you go visit the Holy Land, you might go to the same site where Jesus was baptized. And you can also be baptized there. There's always a pastor or someone there on call that if you pay a few dollars, he would baptize you for sure. It's not a problem. Then you're really baptized in the waters of Jordan. And then if you are really devout, you can bring a little thing of the waters of the Jordan with you. They give you a little thing and you can carry home a little little vial with the waters of Jordan with you. I won't go into that, but I knew a lady that came back and like, Pastor, look! Yeah, let's talk about this. But anyway, so this is Bethany. And it's very interesting because the way going into Jerusalem passed through this Bethany and then through a different Bethany. There are multiple Bethanies. What is the other Bethany? It is the Bethany of Lazarus. The Bethany of Lazarus, which is actually where Jesus stayed when he was in Jerusalem. When Jesus went to Jerusalem, He stayed in Bethany. He stayed in Bethany. And the way it was through Bethany, Bethphage, Mount Olives, and going into Jerusalem. That's how the road went. It went way south and then west into Jerusalem. And this is the Bethany called the Bethany of Lazarus here. So this is the Mount of Olives here. And if you go down the Mount of Olives, there will be a valley and then Jerusalem. So Jerusalem is behind that valley. And this is Bethany. So this is the way going through Bethphage, going here. See, Garden of Gethsemane, real Mount of Olives, going in Jerusalem. And you remember that you would go into Jerusalem through the two golden gates on the east side, which in the prophecies is the gate through which the Messiah would go in. Remember that we looked at this when we talked about Jerusalem. We talked. And those doors have been sealed by the Muslims because that's a Muslim territory. It's part of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And they sealed it. And it's sealed. So there's a lot of people who are waiting for the prophecy of these gates being open as a sign of the coming of the Messiah. But Bethany is a very interesting place, this Bethany there, because Mark 1 and 11 says this. Now when they drew near to Jerusalem, to Bethphage and Bethany and the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two of his disciples. And he entered Jerusalem and went into the temple. And when he, first here, sends two of his disciples. Do you remember what for? I cut the passage, of course. Do you remember why he sent two of his disciples? To get a donkey. To get a coat where he would sit on and ride into Jerusalem. This is the way that he did. When he was coming close, he said, go ahead and get me the donkey. And then verse 11 says, and he entered Jerusalem and went into the temple. When he looked around and everything, as it was already late, he went out to Bethany with the 12. So he went into Jerusalem, checked things out, and went back into Jerusalem. It went back to Bethany. Why did he went back to Bethany? It's because he stayed at someone's house in Bethany. Whose house did he stay in Bethany? Simon the leper. Mark 14:3 said, and while he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he were reclining at the table, a woman came with an alabaster flask of ointment of pure nard, very costly, and she broke a flask and poured it all over his head. So we believe that this was one of the sisters of Lazarus that came and did that, who also lived in Bethany, because Lazarus lived in Bethany. But this is Simon Leper. And again, this is not any archaeological site, but it is believed that this is what is left over of Simon the Leper's house. So if you go to Jerusalem, this is what is called tourist trap. They go there and they want to sell you a lot of stuff and they take you to see these two mounds and they say, this is Simon the Leper. I'm joking. We don't know. We don't know. As I told you, this is the kind of site which is semi-archaeology because it's an ancient site, but it's like there's no really proof of anything here. We don't know except tradition. Should we doubt? Perhaps not, but we also don't know. I might be looking at the house of an unbeliever instead of being looking at the... But there's something very interesting in Bethany there. What is very interesting in Bethany? That would be the last thing we're going to be looking today. What happened that is very meaningful in Bethany? Lazarus' tomb. It's right there. Lazarus' tomb as well. You can clearly see the tomb there, right? No? Right here. Can you go back to the other? Right here. Okay? Under here. Now, here's an interesting site. and it shows how things in the Holy Land are very complex. So initially, there is the blueprint of here being a Byzantine, very early, 3rd, 4th century church. They found even the mosaic and the flooring on it. Okay? But today, this is Lazarus Tomb's church. And this part is also Lazarus' tomb, a Christian. What is here in the middle? A mosque. So during the Muslims' occupation, which was for almost a millennia, they controlled that land for a long time, they built a mosque on top of sanctuaries. And that's one thing that has been always debated. Muslims have said that they never built their own religious places on top of other religious places. While archaeology shows that they did exactly that. Where there was a religious place, they built another religious place on top of it. However, you know, this is all debated, contested, and, you know, there's a lot of geopolitics on top of it. But this is a mosque that is on top of it and sits on top of the frame. However, this was not touched. The Muslims themselves didn't touch because they acknowledged Jesus as a prophet. And this is one of the sites where he performed probably one of the miracles. So it was preserved. And then this is the tomb of Lazarus here, through this door here. We have another. So, see? Saint Lazarus tomb. And look the sign. Kindly show respect for the history of this site. So there's a sign there that asks people to be respectful. And actually, the tomb is going through this site. You go through a kind of a flight of stairs. And I saw that on YouTube videos, which you can probably find, like Lazarus' tomb. And then when you get to the bottom, do you know what you see? Surprisingly, a hole. That's what you see. So you go down the steps and you get to the bottom and there's a hole. That's what it is. It's a tomb, right? You won't find Lazarus' body there. You won't find any archaeological information, any meaningful thing. But it's believed to be Lazarus' tomb. And coming a little bit back to the previous image, the other one, who can find another archaeological site in this image? One that I just showed you before. Can you find it? Can you find it? Where is Wally? What is here? Simon the Leper's house, or so what is believed. All right? But again, I bring you these things because these are sites that if you go to the Holy Land, you're going to visit. People will come there and will show you and will tell history and stuff and all of this. And I think if I were there, I would go visit and see. I think I would. Sure. Why not? I'm there. I travel more than half of the world, 2/3 of the world. Why not? But we need to take these things with a pinch of salt. And that's why I decided to put these things in here is because, and what we're going to see, also part of what we're going to see next week, which is Jesus' holy sites in Jerusalem. I'll bring to you because they are considered archaeological, historical sites, but really, they don't bring any insight and there's into, you know, any new information. And there's nothing in them that we, you know, will add anything to us in terms of context or understanding. But they are holy sites that were, by very early Christians, 17 centuries ago, considered to be the places where these things happened. And so they are places of veneration, they're places of pilgrimage, and they're places where people are taken to visit. Should we doubt? I have no basis to doubt any of these things and say, oh, this is the wrong place. Who am I? I mean, I can't say. But I just bring them to you because I think they are interesting places. And there are many more. Look, if I were bringing things like that, we would be here until next year. I'm trying to select to you just a few more like interesting, but like places. Oh, this is where Jesus stopped and drank water, and there's something. This is where he talked to someone. This is where he did the miracle, such and such. There's so many of these sites, but without any base of foundation. At least this site is Bethany. We know that this is Bethany, where the city of Bethany was. And we know that this is very meaningful and important because Jesus, when he went to Jerusalem, he stayed at Simon the leper's house, the Bible says. And we have him going through and coming back. Sometimes he went back and went to the Mount of Olives to pray. Sometimes he stayed at the Mount of Olives, never came to Simon Leper. But it's the house that he stayed on. It's the house that he stayed on. And the Last Supper was not in Simon the Leper's house. You remember, it was, and I'll show you next week, the place where it's believed to have been the Last Supper. It's a place inside the city, but you remember that in this case, the disciples said, Lord, I mean, where do you want us to prepare? And he says, well, there's someone who already offered, so go in. And they prepare the Lord's Supper in a place inside the city of Jerusalem and not in the house of Simon the leper. All right? But it's interesting, I think. It's interesting, I guess. Any questions?